Why is it so difficult, especially at this time of year, to make accurate predictions about our weather, especially around some of the extreme rain events we've been seeing recently? Today we're going to look at some of the atmospheric and climatic influences that might be causing all this precipitation. You might have heard earlier in the year about the idea of atmospheric rivers and various cold fronts and warm fronts clashing to create particular phenomena. Dr. Andrew King is a lecturer in climate science at the University of Melbourne. Andrew, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning.
And Kate Doyle is with us too. She's ABC weather reporter. Kate, great to have you back on the program.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Kate, 200 mils of rain in some parts of central Queensland, Brisbane Ferry and CityCat services cancelled. Can you take us through what's happening in Queensland right now?
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting situation, although really just a repeat of what we've seen over and over again this year. What we're dealing with is we've got a high-pressure system sitting out over the Tasman Sea, which is directing those moist winds onto the continent. And that's also being aided by the lifting, which is going on associated with a trough. First one across the centre of the continent, but now we're talking about a trough and potentially a low up along the east coast in particular. So really that's providing the moisture, which is also being aided by the fact that we've got that La Nina still sticking around stubbornly this year, which is encouraging warmer waters near us, which is again providing that moisture. So there's a lot of rain around yet again this year.
Is it unusual for a La Nina to stick around this long? How long do they usually stay for?
Yeah, we would usually expect a La Nina to break down in autumn sometime. It's not that unusual for a La Nina to hang around, though. They do tend to hang around longer than the El Nino events. So this is not unprecedented in any means, but, you know, we are getting now to the point where we would expect it to start breaking down. The latest climate update from the BOM does suggest that predicting that it'll break down at the beginning of winter. So, yeah, we're still thinking it will break down sometime soon, but it hasn't really done that just yet.
Yeah, well, weather is predictable to an extent, isn't it? Kate, I loved your article on the ABC News site. If you search ABC, why won't it stop raining? You're going to see some great hand-drawn diagrams from Kate explaining a lot of these influences. Maybe it would be useful at this point, Kate, to talk just briefly about what La Nina and El Nino are and the impact they can have on the climate.
Yeah, no worries. So El Nino and La Nina are phases of the El Nino Southern Oscillation, which is also sometimes called ENSO. And that's just a circulation that happens over the Pacific Ocean. So when we have a La Nina event, it's like the system is in overdrive. So we get the southeasterly trades really ramping up and pushing lots of warm waters in close to Australia. Now, those warm waters allow the moisture to evaporate more easily, which means we have more moisture available in the atmosphere around Australia. It's a little bit like steam escaping from your kettle. All of that moisture rises up, and then if it's then pushed onto the continent and it interacts with something that will help it lift, so something like a trough or a front even or a low or even just the mountains, Great Dividing Range is an excellent lifter of air. If it then rises up higher, it will condense and fall as rain. The cycle then continues and that air goes back across the Pacific and descends on South America before coming back across to us. So it's a big circulation that happens over the Pacific. And the La Nina phase really encourages moisture to be available to Australia. It doesn't necessarily dictate that we will have more rain. It needs to interact with other factors and every La Nina is different. But it just sort of weighs the odds in the favour of rain. And El Nino is the opposite. So it's when that circulation, if you picture across the Pacific, is going the other way. So the air is rising over South America and then descending upon us. When that air is descending, it's pushing all that air down. It reduces the possibility of that air lifting to then condense and fall as rain. It also reduces the amount of moisture available. So El Nino is when we associate with drier conditions or drought. And La Nina is what we associate with wetter conditions, especially on the East Coast.
We're speaking with Kate Doyle, who's ABC weather reporter. And with us today too is Dr. Andrew King, lecturer in climate science at the University of Melbourne. And your questions are starting to come in on text message too. Someone says, is anyone in Queensland adding up the days and nights? We must be getting close to 40. They're worried about pushing the biblical limit there. Send us a text if you've got a question about what's happening with the weather and what's forming it and causing it and what it might look like in coming months and years. 0418 226 576. Andrew King, we're still in the La Nina pattern now, as Kate said, though many meteorologists are trying to forecast exactly when it might end. And we've had two La Ninas in a row. Tell me how that's affected the weather here in Australia.
Yeah, as Kate was saying, the La Nina really boosts the amount of moisture in the air and increases the likelihood of having very wet conditions. And we've seen that the last two summers, really. We've had very wet conditions over parts of eastern Australia, especially in the last few months. And that's in stark contrast to what we saw in the 3 years previously. In the build-up to the Black Summer, we had very dry conditions when we didn't have any La Nina occurring. So we had a lack of rainfall, drought occurring, and then very dry conditions that led up to the really severe bushfires we saw in 2019 and early 2020. So El Niño and La Niña exert a huge influence on our climate in Australia, and the last few years really exemplify that.
And it's not unprecedented to have three in a row La Niñas, is it? Do you think we might be headed for that again, Andrew?
It's possible. Yeah, you're right. So we've had two or three La Niñas in a row at various times in the last few decades. Many people will remember the 2010-11 and 2011-12 La Niñas as well, which were associated with that really bad flooding, especially in parts of Queensland, like around Brisbane. And during the 1970s, we had quite a few La Niñas and very wet conditions as well. Australia just has these spells of very wet and very dry conditions that are reasonably closely tied to what's going on in the Pacific Ocean and whether we have El Niño or La Niña conditions.
And Andrew, someone's texted in, Greg from Long Beach in New South Wales says, does the wet weather phenomena associated with the SOI, Southern Oscillation Index, interact with the Indian Ocean Dipole? And if so, how? That's an interesting one, isn't it, Andrew?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the Indian Ocean Dipole, firstly, is a bit like ENSO, but in the Indian Ocean. So it's where we have warmer waters, sometimes in the western Indian Ocean and sometimes in the east. And when there are warmer waters in the east Indian Ocean, we tend to have wetter conditions over Australia. And that's what's being forecast for the next few months. We do see interactions between the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean, and it tends to be that when we have La Niña conditions, we're more likely to have what's called a negative Indian Ocean dipole. So when we have warmer conditions in the East Indian Ocean that also provide more moisture over Australia and a higher likelihood of low pressure systems as well, and increase the probability of rainfall, particularly in winter and early spring.
Kate Doyle, Tropical Cyclone Karim is currently in the Indian Ocean too. What's that likely to mean for weather patterns along the west coast?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it has actually broken down now, so it's no longer considered to be of cyclone strength. But it is still expected to impact the west coast of Western Australia, but not through landfall. What's happening is we've got a situation where the moisture associated with that tropical cyclone is now being streaming into the south of Western Australia, and it's being dragged in with a front there. So that's helping to enhance the moisture available to that front, which is crossing the coast, bringing about some pretty wet conditions for the southeast. So look out for the warnings there, folks. But yeah, we are expecting a bit of rain in that part of the world.
Getting quite a few texts asking about longer term issues. I'll go to one of the shorter term ones first. Perhaps this is for you, Kate. Will La Nina mean we get more snow than usual this winter?
Ooh, snowfall is really one of the interesting ones. I have actually looked at an article. I have written an article on what brings about a good snow year. It's really tricky to tell. As far as La Niña is concerned, it's a bit of a double-edged sword. So it can help to encourage relatively cooler conditions and the moisture needed for snow, but it can also bring about quite a lot of rain, which can be a negative because realistically these days, the last thing that the snow fields want with their great ability to pump out man-made snow is for it to then rain on it all and ruin things. So it's a bit of a double-edged sword. I think generally from memory, La Niña is a little bit better than El Niño, but really it's kind of neutral conditions is what they're looking for these years. Nice and cold without too much rain is really the ideal, but it's very difficult to predict what's going to happen with an Australian snow year. Realistically, they're hit and miss at the best of times as far as all the things that are difficult to forecast far out because you need just the right individual weather systems to happen to get good snow for Australia. So that's one of the really tricky ones.
Well, and for a complete change of scene, Andrew Knight, we're in autumn now and the northern wet season is supposed to be done and it isn't. What might that mean for traditional wet and dry seasons up north? Is this a long-term shift?
Well, this is probably also tied with the La Niña and the negative Indian Ocean dipole that seems to be starting to form. That does increase the likelihood of having more rain over northern Australia as well. We will still have a dry season in northern Australia. We have a very pronounced difference between the austral summer, which is wetter, and the austral winter, which is drier. But the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean do influence the timing of the wet season and dry season shifts. And increase the chance that the dry season won't be quite as dry. So if we have warmer ocean temperatures like we do at the moment around northern Australia, it does mean that there's a slightly higher likelihood of having a bit more rain through the dry season than we would normally expect, but still a lot drier than the wet season.
Andrew, questions coming through on our text message number. How has the incidence of severe flooding events changed in the last 50 years? And I think this is a question on a lot of people's minds, and it's a question about climate change.
Yes, so certainly climate change is exerting a big influence on Australia, mainly through things like heat waves, where we're seeing a lot more heat waves than we used to. With flood events, it's quite complicated. We haven't really seen a strong increase in flood events over most parts of Australia, but we have really high variability in our climate. So we have years where we can have quite a lot of flood events, like we've seen recently, and we have years where we hardly see any flood events, like 2017, 2018, and 2019. We didn't have many at all. So we have big flood events from time to time, and it's hard to really pick out a clear trend in those flood events. And we have flooding that occurs for different reasons as well. So you can have floods that occur because we have a big storm that brings really heavy rain for a few hours. And we think that those kinds of storms are intensifying as the planet warms. So those kinds of flood events may become a bit more frequent, but the kind of the large scale flood events that we see after having days and days of rain, which we saw earlier this year, we don't really know if climate change is impacting those kinds of events. So it's kind of a messy picture, but there's not a huge trend in flood events generally over Australia. Where we've got areas where storm surges can bring flooding, we know that sea level rise is occurring because the planet's warming and those storm surges are getting higher. So those kinds of flood events are definitely intensifying as the planet warms. So quite a messy picture. Depends on the type of flood.
And you authored a study, Andrew, on atmospheric rivers in Australia and some of the volumes of water vapour travelling in these great high atmospheric rivers were extreme. I think you quoted 800 kilograms of water vapour per second passing over Sydney on a day in March last year. How much of an influence are they going to have in the future?
Well, yes, we have these atmospheric rivers that transport huge amounts of moisture in the atmosphere. And if they stay in place, in the same place for a long period of time, we can have lots of rain over the same region that causes flooding, like we saw in Sydney in March last year and over southeast Queensland and northern New South Wales earlier this year. These atmospheric rivers are quite common, and overall we expect them to intensify a little bit as the planet warms. They do occur around the world, not just over Australia. But it's quite hard to tell how they'll change over Australia because we also have shifts in our weather patterns that mean that they may occur in some places more than others in future relative to where they are now. So there's a lot of research being done in this area at the moment.
Just quickly too, Andrew, we heard the term rain bombs tossed around a bit earlier this year, but there's some misconceptions about that idea, aren't there?
Yeah, so a lot of scientists weren't very keen on the term rain bomb. We have other things that we call, or sometimes called bombs in meteorology. So when we have a low pressure system that gets a lot deeper, so the pressure decreases very quickly, that's sometimes called a weather bomb in meteorological circles. And we also have other types of weather that are sometimes given illustrative names, sometimes with the word bomb in them. So a rain bomb isn't really a weather term that scientists use, but it seems to have caught on very quickly with some of the severe rain we saw earlier this year.
Yes, you can see why it might be a very popular term in newspapers, for example. This is a question from text about the way that La Nina affects various things. We hear that La Nina brings warm water to the Western Pacific, and we were warned by the Bureau of a greater probability of cyclones, but we also heard that despite the recent bleaching, La Nina should bring a reprieve for the Great Barrier Reef. And this person texting says, why should it bring a reprieve if the Western Pacific is warmer? Andrew, is that something you can answer?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. It sounds a bit counterintuitive, doesn't it, that if we have, generally we have more coral bleaching events during El Nino when we tend to have colder waters generally in the Western Pacific. But the reason we have more bleaching in El Ninos typically is because the corals are quite shallow. So they're strongly affected by the amount of sunshine over Queensland. So if we have sunnier conditions, which we tend to have during El Ninos, we tend to have more kind of heating of the surface of the water where it's quite shallow, and that leads to coral bleaching. This year we've seen coral bleaching even in a La Nina, which is very concerning and a really strong indication that climate change is having really harming the Great Barrier Reef and causing possibly irreparable damage.
And just to finish up this discussion, Kate Doyle, we've been talking about the unpredictability of the weather lately, and I believe there's something called the autumn predictability barrier that describes how tricky a month this is. How strong an outlook do we have for the coming months and the rest of the year given that?
Yeah, autumn is traditionally a really difficult time to be making these long-term forecasts, which is a real shame because it's the time of year that we'd really like a good long-term forecast for all the farmers out there trying to get crops through the season. But really, as we transition from sort of the summer systems into the winter ones, it's just a really difficult time to forecast ahead. Basically, because there are so many things changing, there are so many variables, it's really difficult to tell what's going to lock in the future. So the predictability this time of year is pretty low. But having been said, it is looking like we are now looking like we might get a negative IOD over winter, which would encourage more rainfall for the southeast of Australia and for the New South Wales region, who've already had plenty of rain. But it's really difficult at this stage to make too many long-term predictions.
Yeah, so many variables. It's been fascinating just having a little look at the way weather works today with you both, though. Thank you so much for your time.
No worries.
Thank you.
Kate Doyle is ABC weather reporter, and Dr. Andrew King is a lecturer in climate science at the University of Melbourne.
It's easier than ever to hear your favourite local and national ABC radio stations live and on demand on the ABC Listen app.